Hey there, Open Forcers, and welcome back to this episode of the Gig Academy, where we talk about all things independent contractor and gig economy related. Joining us today for the first time is Wendy Greenland and repeat guests Doug Graw and Natalie Putnam. Welcome, everyone. And for those that might not have listened to the podcast for the first time, let's do a quick round of intros, starting with Wendy, our first timer.
Thanks for having me, Nick. I've been wanting to be on your podcast and see what this is all about. So thrilled to be here today. Wendy Greenland, CEO of Open Force. Throughout my career, I've been involved in all levels of operations in technology companies. And most recently, before Open Force, I was with an HRS and payroll platform. And when I had the opportunity to come to Open Force and really understand the 1099 side of human capital management, it was a really exciting opportunity for me because I've seen so many HR admins and payroll admins trying to grapple with this challenge of managing a 1099 workforce and making sure that they do that properly, compliantly. So having that opportunity here at Open Force has been a great, just a professional opportunity for me. I've learned so much through the Open Force team, through the industries that we serve, and thrilled to be on the podcast with you today, Nick. And I've heard great things. I love listening to your podcast. So glad to be here today.
Well, thank you so much. And it's great to have you reunited. For those listening, fun fact, Wendy was my first boss when I came to Open Force. So it's great to be seeing you again face to face.
Yep, absolutely, Nick.
Awesome. Natalie, would you like to go next?
Certainly. A pleasure to be here, Nick, and join you yet again. I have been with Open Force now almost a year. And in that time, I've learned a great deal. I do have a fairly long supply chain and logistics background, but got to know Open Force through the last role I played, where I was the CEO of a final mile delivery company and was seeking advice in managing the complicated landscape of independent contracting. And so as I reached out to Open Force, I was really impressed with the solution and decided that I would join forces and see where this takes us in terms of really changing the environment for the ICs in a better way. So I've been really excited about it. My background is over 25 years in trucking, logistics, warehousing, railroad for a while too. So I've got a broad background, but the recent experience has all been in final mile and gig.
Excellent. Well, it's been awesome having you, and I've learned so much from you just from the one podcast we did and then also offline and everything too. So it's great to have you, Natalie.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Doug, the man, the myth, the legend.
Something like that. Yes. Thanks for having me back, Nick.
It's a pleasure.
I'm looking forward to being a part of this, and especially to share the floor and be on it with Natalie and Wendy. They're very good leaders in our industry. So, and I guess to answer the question, a little bit of background, long time in transportation, as a lawyer and as kind of a risk person and managing the complicated landscape, as Natalie accurately described it, of using independent contractors, working with independent contractors. What I'm excited about in general, when talking about the independent contractor status issue, is, and what I love about Open Force is we're about work without limits, which means to me, we want to support and we support the rights of workers to choose the path that works for them. Yeah. For a lot of them, that means independence and growing their own business. And that's awesome. We've got the tools, the technology, the people to help make that happen. And if that's not your path, if your path is you prefer employment, there's awesome solutions for that as well. And we support the notion that people should be able to choose that. We don't support people forcing one or the other.
Definitely. Thanks, Doug. And always a pleasure talking with you. And I learned so much from you as well. So thank you all for joining us. And today we're tackling, it's becoming an annual occurrence now here at the Gig Academy, trends and predictions for the coming new year. So for this episode, we are talking about the trends and predictions for 2023. And for the first timer, Wendy, I have the first question set up for you. So the driver shortage only seems to be getting worse. Why should transportation businesses focus on retention rather than recruiting? And where do benefits come into play with this?
Well, wow, that's quite a that's a challenging question, especially when you're talking about independent contract workforces. We've been talking about the driver shortage here at Open Force for quite a while. I know that's not a new trend in the industry. As a matter of fact, just recently, the American Trucking Association said that the driver shortage hit a historic high in 2021 and that it will continue to grow over the next 9 or 10 years. So that's only going to get worse, not better. Okay. What we've seen, the clients that we work with every day that utilize independent contract workforces, they're starting to shift, I think, more towards retaining quality drivers, quality people who they can count on, who do it right, who understand insurances and compliance and have the tools that they needed. So high turnover in the industry leads to burnout. Having a good experience with good drivers who know their business, that's a quality trend that we're beginning to see. So if your drivers are independent contractors, that becomes a little bit more complicated, right? So if they're W-2s, you put those retention programs in place, it's something, engagement, those are things they're working on. But when you have an independent contract workforce in the way that we work with our contracting companies, those benefits, those things that they need become more difficult. The retention programs become more difficult because they're small businesses, they're independent businesses. So how do you retain a company, a small company, while not being able to provide some of the things you would for a W-2 employee? So right. That's the challenge that we like to work on and solve at Open Force. Doug mentioned it. You know, there's many drivers out there that choose to be employees, but for those that choose to be independent contractors and run a small business and try and grow that small business, what are the benefits, if you will, of the things that they need in order to retain that small business as a vendor of choice for your company if you're working with those workforces? So we're seeing a trend, a number of trends. We're seeing retirees come back into the workforce because of some of the inflationary pressures that we're seeing. They need extra cash. We're seeing young people come into the industry. And now they're looking at maybe growing this as a career, right? They want flexibility. They want higher earning potential. And so they're coming into the industry. So there's different needs in terms of benefits, in terms of retention programs for those different populations. For those that are on the younger generations, they're looking for things that are more around personal development. So thinking about like mental health and they like therapy, you know, looking for things that provide therapy options. So how you can't do that within their small business, right? So how do you do that?
Yeah.
Partnering with Open Force by providing those things on our platform as a third party, making those things available to independent contractors solves that problem. So just to give you an example, we recently added a company called Avibra in as one of our health insurance providers. And they're a great partner that offers 24/7 well-being advice, specialized in leading a well-balanced life. And those are things that are available to independent contractors on our portal for those contracting companies that work for us. Those become available to them. Studies have shown that happier workers work longer, they stay engaged more, and the company performs better because it's a lot less expensive to retain a good quality driver than it is to go out and continually try and recruit. So providing those things while not risking worker classification issues, those are the challenges that we solve here at Open Force.
Awesome. Thank you for all that, Wendy. That's super informative and definitely, you know, important to having a happy workforce, right?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Natalie, why is company culture so important when engaging with gig workers and independent contractors?
A great question, but it really applies beyond the gig or independent contractor. Culture, as they say, trumps strategy every time. And culture impacts employees as well as independent contractors and vendors. And I think sometimes back in the day, and I don't recall the automotive company now, but they brought in a new executive in charge of sourcing. And his name's on the tip of my tongue, but I'm sure the automotive guys would know this. They would remember this. He had a vicious reputation for his treatment of providers to that particular automotive company. He was creating a culture for his vendors. Okay. And the culture was not a healthy culture. In the end, that wasn't a successful strategy. And so I think about that as it relates to the current gig and final mile environment, and understanding that vendors are there because they choose to be. These independent contractors participate because they made a decision to do business with you. They can just as easily make a decision to do business with someone else. So I think while we're in the nascent stages of this new world economy, that those choices by these drivers are going to eventually pick winners and losers for retailers and for the companies that contract with them. I'll give you some examples. You know, we read a lot about, and those in logistics are reading a lot about improving working conditions for these, again, could be W-2 or ICs, but the conditions at pickup and at delivery, the empty miles that drivers are asked to run, and dwell times. We really need to get serious about these things. It's been talked about for years. There's not a lot going on in some areas to really fix this. And it's not specific to cultures, but if drivers know that their companies are looking out for them, they're more likely to stick around. And I think managers too, or whoever is in contact with these ICs and vendors, they might be thinking of culture as only within the four walls of the company that they work at. But it really extends into the cab of a truck out onto the highway. And so the three things that I, and I used to be a dispatcher, so I speak from experience, but respect, honesty, and fairness are the trifecta. Mm. Respect, honesty, and fairness creates trust. So if you wonder how to start, and I'm going to get a little tactical here. Okay. If you're currently calling your ICs by their first names, for example, you might want to consider a different approach. I had worked with a fleet manager that called every driver by Mr. or Ms., something so simple, and yet it telegraphed respect with every conversation. Yeah. So that's something folks can take away today and begin to do immediately. But even when you're contracting, you're creating a culture. Tying that into driver retention, the top performing ICs are more likely to stay engaged with contracting companies that they enjoy working with. So create that environment, embody a strong company culture, ensure your managers are well-versed in the nuances of the IC relationship. We know there's separation between W-2 and independence, but ultimately you're still dealing with human beings. Right. So thinking about ways to add value, and as Wendy mentioned, enhancing the value prop for these relationships you have is a place where open source really can drive value for your organization, because we can provide additional value that you in a direct relationship with a vendor are unable to really do effectively. So just a few thoughts.
That was wonderful, Natalie. There's so much information there to unpack. And wow, thank you. Wendy, I want to circle back on something you touched on in the first question. You're talking about young people and retirees. So understanding this a little bit better, how can transportation companies benefit by contracting with retirees?
You know, Natalie, I thought what you said about treating them with respect, you know, as you look at bringing retirees in, they can fulfill some intermittent work, and they're looking for ways to mitigate that, those inflationary pressures, the cost at the pump, you know, increased cost at the grocery store, things like that. And contracting with them is a win-win, but that respect you were talking about is so incredibly important. Retirees, I think, are a win-win for a number of reasons. They can work their own schedule. They provide a positive influence. They have years of experience and wisdom in the industry, and they can inspire a younger group with their insight and their inspiring work ethic. So there's a number of reasons that I think that's becoming a trend, but also the benefits of working with them. But circling back to Natalie's point, I think how you work with them and the ways that you're interacting from a dispatcher all the way down throughout the organization will be really important in working with retirees as a part of your IC workforce.
And I think it ties back to what you're both were saying too there, just, you know, creating that company culture, you know, and extending that further. And, you know, the retirees being able to mentor the young and upcoming entrepreneurs looking to build their business and everything. And just it becomes very synergistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. All right, Doug, I haven't forgotten about you. All right, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
All right, my friend. Mergers and acquisitions. This is something we've talked about quite a bit on multiple episodes of the podcast. But mergers and acquisitions in transportation have exploded during and after the pandemic, and it doesn't seem to be going any way anytime soon. In fact, it's gaining more momentum and will carry into 2023. So what's the first thing a transportation business should do if they're thinking about buying or selling in 2023?
Yeah, good question. Thanks, Nick. When I think about mergers and acquisition in really any industry, but definitely within transportation, you think about it from a couple of different perspectives. If you are the buyer or the seller, you're evaluating what does this company look like now and what is its potential in the future. The now is a pretty easy evaluation. What are their assets? How many, you know, people do they work with? How many independent contractors do they have? How many vehicles they have, what's their customer base look like, what's their revenue? That's relatively easy analysis. Where mergers and acquisition can either get very lucrative or become kind of steals for buyers to a certain degree is what kind of potential the company has, okay? So if I'm a buyer and I'm looking to buy a company, I want to know, Is this company a company I am going to easily and quickly be able to take somewhere and do something with? Or is it a company I've got to go in and clean up a lot of stuff? Are there some bombs and messes and clean up, whatever you want to call it, to do in there? And Natalie hit on one big one. What kind of culture am I about to be eating? Okay, do I have a culture that is really going to be able to really fire on all cylinders when I take over, or do I have to clean up a lot of old messes from bad leadership and bad management and so forth? Wendy talked about it. Do I have a workforce that has access to quality benefits? Do I have a workforce that is treated well and so forth? Do I have a workforce that is compliant? Let's say I'm transportation and healthcare, there are all sorts of regulations around the transporting anything in healthcare, okay? So if I'm using independent contractors and I need to make sure I'm compliant with all sorts of HIPAA rules and the rules and regulations that go around transporting anything pharmaceutical or anything medical and all that kind of stuff, I know that if I'm buying somebody that's not good in that stuff, I'm going to have to spend a lot of money and a lot of time cleaning that stuff up. So if I'm a seller, I want to get that stuff as cleaned up as I possibly can, so that when I start negotiating this deal, there's a phrase in M&A that you talk about a lot. It's called the multiplier. Okay. How much is this company's worth is going to be X amount multiplied by something.
Okay.
So you want that multiplier to be as large a number as possible if you're selling. Okay. The more you can get rid of the mess and the potential bombs and the hidden risks, your multiplier goes up, because good buyers look for that stuff. They'll pay for it if it's in good shape. They'll be happy to do it, but they will negotiate you hard if that's not in good shape. That's where companies like OpenForce do a really good job, we have clients who have said to us, you earned us another multiplier. Our transaction went up X amount, Y amount, because the buyer knew we were compliant and in good shape. That's what the power of compliance in any aspect of a merger and acquisition.
Can I jump in on that just quickly?
Yeah, please.
We had a situation not too long ago where we helped clean up the compliance from a company that was being acquired. And then that company cleaned up their compliance with us, and then they were acquired. So we went from acquisition to acquisition to acquisition. And then the final buyer of the other two entities said, this is the gold standard for compliance with independent contractor workforces. They were so pleased by how we cleaned up all of that, that it made the entire transaction from beginning to end much cleaner and easier for everyone involved. And I think that goes to Doug's point.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Awesome. So Natalie, I've got another question for you. So a lot of things on the horizon in the world, crazy things going on. Everyone's looking to kind of do their bit to make the world a little bit of a brighter place. So how are sustainable initiatives evolving in the transportation industry?
It's a pretty interesting time, isn't it, for sustainability? I think people thought that maybe this was a blip on the radar and it would go away. And clearly that is not the case. Sustainable practices are institutionalized now within the largest retail chains in the world. They're also institutionalized inside your home. Mm-hmm. The biggest job at my house most weeks is breaking down cardboard boxes from Amazon. and recycling. So I find this a really fascinating topic. We know that e-commerce is a resource-intensive approach to supply chain. E-commerce mm-hmm. is growing at the rate of 10 to 15% every year, and the consumption has changed so that what used to be full truckloads of product going to a DC or potentially to an individual retail store are now broken down to eaches, and those eaches are now delivered to homes. So it has really added to the expense in the supply chain. And the solutions that I'm seeing, at least, that are most intriguing are the idea of sharing supply chain networks. It's again in the early stages, but a supply chain 4.0 approach in which you have these final mile delivery drivers as an example, supporting multiple retailers and those retailers coordinating those routes to assure that there's efficiency. Why do we need 5, 6, or 7 different delivery drivers going down our streets every day if we could have one that was taking care of the needs of all the retailers? And the reason it exists today is because retailers and others, but primarily retailers, they feel they want to control the customer experience. So how do you do that? Well, you control it by controlling your supply chain. But the problem with that is this inefficiency that's inherent in the duplication of the resources for each retailer. So as those big companies get together, and I'm confident they're going to, you will start to see these more coordinated approaches in this collaboration among supply chain operators to get to the most efficient footprint in moving product from wherever it comes from offshore all the way through ports and ultimately into your living room. And if you wonder if that matters or not in the world view, I think it's interesting to note that about 27% of the greenhouse emissions, for better or for worse, and I think it's for worse, they come from the transport industry. And 50% of that comes from light duty vehicles. And as you know, light duty vehicles are normally in the final mile. So it's early. It's very early in this process, but I would look for that to become a core part of this. And speaking of those final mile vehicles, are they going to continue to be combustion engine? Or are we moving towards EVs? I was around when we were, I won't say deploying, but maybe flirting with natural gas, both the compressed natural gas and liquefied natural gas. And so that was the first steps into some of the attempt to be less carbon impactive in supply chains. But now it's much more exciting because now we're looking at electric vehicles, and I think they're here to stay. So I'm really excited about that. And then just one last piece of this. And again, this is in logistics management. This was the November issue, but I loved it. They said if the world of brands were sharing a supply chain network, just that alone could reduce the carbon footprint by 30%.
Wow.
That's the inefficiency. And for those of us that worked a long time in trucking, we all know the dread of running around with a partially filled trailer, and it goes on all the time, empty miles. Think about the empty trailers rolling down the road. If you could put product on every one of them, that's how you start to drive down cost and also improve sustainable measures in supply chain. So I could go on because this is an interesting topic to me.
It is.
It really is. But even the shared supply chain network that's discussed, they said if, again, those brands shared that network, you could also take 90,000 trucks off the road.
Wow.
Right. Wow. Yeah. So that's it's a crazy. it's a really interesting topic. I don't think it'll ever go away at this point. I think this is part of supply chain driving efficiency. Yeah. It had to be that to be sustainable, it had to also drive down cost. Mm-hmm. It clearly is a line. Sustainability drives down cost, not up. So we're there. We've made that
that's
turn.
Awesome. Yeah.
Now the next turn is to get to the collaborative level.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, and got a shout out to James over at Fluid Truck, episode 7, yes. I believe, of the podcast he was on. And they've started to invest in a fleet of electric vehicles that we offer as a member benefit through the Open Force portal to ICs. Go listen to that episode. I don't want to take up too much time of here, but they're doing some really awesome things to kind of work towards, you know, the sustainability that you're talking about. So yeah. Got to give them a quick shout out. Fluid Truck, go look them up. Better yet, go listen to episode 7. So Doug, you've actually been on a few times to kind of talk about these things. We did a mini episode after the Department of Labor's ruling this year, but we've seen a lot of shakeups in legislation affecting transportation and independent contractors this year. What should transportation companies prepare for in 2023?
Yeah, so prepare for a little bit of more of the same. And what I mean by that is not so much that a more of 2022, but okay. The independent contractor issue and the debate about whether or not someone is an independent contractor or an employee is not new. It's not contentious for the first time ever. It's been an issue for decades. And I would say is if I'm looking at 2023, focus on the basics. Step one, do you have a channel for understanding what rules exist and what rules are coming? Who is your source for information about what's happening at the federal level, whether it's the Department of Labor, the National Labor Relations Board, the state level, so the states that you're operating in, not just where you're headquartered, but where you're operating. And last but not least, the cities and counties that you operate in. Mm-hmm. Do you have a mechanism for staying up to date on those laws, those rules, and all that kind of stuff? So that'd be number one for 2023 if I'm prepping for the year.
Okay.
Number two is I'm making sure that my independent contractor program is in good shape. And when I mean it's in good shape, I mean good shape in a couple of different ways. The most important of which is, do I treat my independent contractors well? And by treating them well, I mean treating them well in a couple of different ways. I mean, okay. To the things that Natalie talked about earlier, about treating them fairly and respectfully and establishing that trust. You know, I really like the Mr. and Miss thing. I hadn't heard that before, but I really like that comment. I think
Me
it
too.
Makes a lot
Me
of
too.
Sense.
Yeah.
But how do your people interact with them? Do they respect their business freedom and treat them fairly? Okay. Do you have a easy administration process with them? Is it easy to get them job opportunities or load opportunities? Is it easy for them to accept? Is it easy for them to sign paperwork? Is it easy for them to upload documents, that kind of stuff? Is it easy to work with them? Do you pay accurately and on time and fairly and so on? So shore up your relationship. Make sure you're good and strong in those areas. The other things to shore up in your relationship are from a legal perspective, hey, how much control are you exercising? Really be critical of yourself. Take a look at every part of your business and say to yourself, am I exercising control? Would somebody on the outside think I'm exercising control? Or am I giving them choices and respecting their business freedom? Be critical of yourself and see where you can ease up a little bit there. And also look at the profitability of your independent contractors. I will say this, it is difficult to find examples of really big audits and liabilities and lawsuits and all that kind of stuff when the independent contractors are financially successful. So look at the financial health of your business and your independent contractor's business to see and to make sure that, that you are providing an atmosphere, an environment for them to be financially successful. We lawyers can dress up the laws in many different ways, but if you can show that your independent contractors have meaningful choices in how they operate their business, if you can show they have meaningful financial decisions that are going to dictate whether or not they're going to make money or lose money, and if you treat them well, fairly, with respect, you make the contract administration easy, you pay them accurately, you get access to what Wendy said earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you are in America, if you're a contractor or an employee, if you get hurt, I hope you've got access to our medical system, okay? That can be work comp if you're an employee. It can be OCC if you're an independent contractor. Use companies like us that can get you access to quality benefits to protect yourself and your business. If you as a business have those types of resources and have that type of independent contractor program, you don't have to be as alarmed and worried about what the folks in Washington, D.C. or the folks in your local city council might be doing. Because you're going to be in pretty good shape no matter what nuances and the rules change.
Awesome. Well, Doug, that's a lot of great information. And this actually kind of dovetails very nicely into the question that I have queued up for Wendy. you talked about insurance. Insurance rates are continuously rising. We've seen it every year. How are insurance companies evolving to meet the needs of gig workers, independent contractors, and companies that engage with them, Wendy?
Oh, this is the subject I could spend a lot of time talking about. I could spend all day on.
That's why we've got it set aside special for you.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been talking about sustainability. We've been talking about, you know, the pressures of inflation and some of the things people are doing to say, hey, I need to make some extra money. And so you've got retirees coming in, young people coming in, trying their hand at this. What's happening is there's a driver shortage. There's a demand for more drivers. We're trying to get more into the industry and people need to make some extra cash. So, so they're raising their hand. I'll drive. Oh, sure. I can do that. Right. Oh, flexibility, higher earning potential. I can be my own boss. It all sounds great. There's a lot of good intentions there, right? We need the drivers. They want to drive. And so this independent contractor model seems like it would work great. So when you think about what Doug was saying in terms of classification status and all of the issues that you need to be considering when working with an IC workforce versus a W-2 workforce, and then you add on top of it well-intentioned people who are really not adequately ready for what it means to be a small business owner, operate in compliance and transportation laws, and have the proper insurances, it puts a lot of risk into the mix. And just to give you an example, I have a close family member of mine who decided to just deliver some groceries, make some extra cash for the family, seemed like a really easy thing to do. And I said, to Doug's point, what about occupational accident insurance? You're an independent contractor. She said, well, nobody ever talked to me about that. What is that? Don't they have work comp? And I said, no, that doesn't apply when you're an independent contractor. Well, why didn't anybody tell me that? So because you have some of these things going on and people getting in, not being vetted, not really understanding what those new requirements are in order to meet the transportation laws and the contract requirements that the retailers are providing, that risk equals higher insurance rates. As claims increase like this, you know, they get on the road, they drive, they get into an accident, they don't have commercial auto, or they fall and hurt themselves seriously while they're delivering groceries or something like that. All of a sudden, you see all of this risk begin to increase. And we have a close partner that we work with, Risk Strategies. They put out a recent publication that indicated that 15 to 25% rate increases in 2023 in transportation are expected due to a number of these factors. Yeah, it's so a lot of large increases that may be coming. And so, you know, coming into the industry, we don't want barriers to entry. We don't want them to have all sorts of difficult problems getting all of these insurances and compliance items under their belt so they can get out on the road. But on the other side of it, you don't want people on the road that aren't vetted and don't have the proper insurances. So it becomes kind of a challenging issue to resolve. And it's something that OpenForce that we do every day. And it's what drives us. We want to make sure that the drivers have what they need to be successful as a small business in this industry. And we don't want them locked into very expensive long-term insurance policies, big down payments, because if they go out and try and find this and source this on their own, it is very expensive. And they do have large down payments and they have to pay monthly, whether they're on dispatch or off dispatch. So they should have the option to pay premiums based on the work performed. So they're only billed for the periods they have provided services for, that usage base on or off dispatch, whether it's for their commercial auto, for their vehicle, whether it's for their personal risk, property and casualty insurance, or even health, you know, their health and medical, you know, dental and vision, those kinds of things are offered through the portal for the independent contractors that we serve. So making sure that IC has their small business toolkit that has all of these pieces in it and they're compliant, they have their certificates to Doug's point, HIPAA compliance and all the things that they need to get on the road. Those are the pieces of this that are challenging, but that's what we're doing every day and what we're so passionate about.
That's awesome. Glad you're at the helm, Wendy. Well, my friends, parting is such sweet sorrow, but we do have one more question for you all. And we'll start with Wendy, since she's the first timer. Wendy, what's one thing you learned personally or professionally in 2022?
No. As Doug was talking, I was thinking back on the year. There's been a lot of back and forth on independent contractor status in all of this, the federal agencies, many of the state agencies we've been tracking throughout the year. And these are small businesses. And I think one thing that I've really kind of resonated throughout the year with me is that many of the folks that are in these state and federal agencies don't always understand that the independent contractors we're serving want to be independent. And so if they understood that, they may approach some of this legislation a little differently. And, so for me, from a professional standpoint with an OpenForce, I just think we need to get better at communicating that these are small business owners, whether they pay, they receive their payment through 1099 or however they receive that money and they file their taxes at the end of the year, they're small business owners. And so we have to get better at communicating that and working with those small businesses to be successful, make sure they have the insurances, the tax help, the finances they need. And make sure that we're sending that message loud and clear, a little differently, a little better in 2023. Personally, I would say I learned that I am too old to go running after a toddler. My grandbaby moved in with me in August, and all of a sudden I had a toddler running around the house and, while trying to run a business and then, having a toddler run around, it's been a ton of fun. But it's also exhausting, and I kind of taken back to those years early on when my kids were little, and now watching that, it's been a lot of fun.
That's awesome.
I was doing that, but I've learned a lot again, or been reminded of maybe.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thanks, Wendy. And I agree with you. People just want to be free. People want to work how they want to work, do what they want to do. And we're standing in the gap trying to protect that. So Natalie, what's one thing you've learned personally or professionally or both in 2022?
I had a chance to think about it because Wendy was able to answer first. That was great to buy me some time. I think because I'm new enough to Open Forest, been here less than a year. Mm-hmm. The thing that really struck me was to find out how many companies don't fully understand the exposure and risk that they face when they are not properly handling these IC and vendor and relationships. And yeah, it's not just one or two, it's many, many. And from experience, I can tell you where I came from, well, I had good legal counsel. They weren't versed in this particular aspect of the law. And so the guidance I got wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are in that situation. I talked to a major retailer just the other day, and she advised me that she's working with three separate attorneys to help her. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I hope they specialize in transportation and in the legislation around independent contracting, because if they don't, you might get the same advice I did. So anyhow, that was the aha after being here. And then personally, I figured out, since we work remotely, it turns out you can spend 8 hours a day on Zoom. I don't recommend it, but we do it here. And if you do, I highly recommend a stand-up desk. So
that's good advice.
That's what I've learned personally.
My back is telling me the similar thing. I need to be able to stand up for sure. Yeah. Thanks, Natalie. And Doug, what have you learned personally and professionally in 2022?
I have also been lucky enough to go last year, so I have been able to watch or listen to some good answers. I learned a ton. I like to learn. I love to just hear from people and read and just listen and all that kind of stuff and hear good stuff. So, but a couple of things that jump out at me. One, my wife purchased a hybrid vehicle this year, a part electric, part normal gas engine. And I did not know that it is common in electric vehicles or hybrid vehicles that your radio will not have AM frequency.
Oh, what?
Didn't know that was a thing. But apparently
that's weird.
A thing. So when I tried to listen to the local sports game, couldn't do it.
No.
It didn't have AM radio.
Oh.
So that's a thing. And I will say professionally, I won't go into any details of it, but my background is mostly with transportation companies. Open Forest being much more of a tech forward type of business, I've learned a ton just about what it's like to be that kind of a business and so forth. But I'll say something more specifically. Something that I know Wendy and Natalie and I all have in common is we do read a lot. Both for fun, but also for professionally. And one book in particular that Open Force recommended to me, and Wendy's going to correct me on the name because I don't remember the actual name, but it's a Stephen Simic, I believe, was the author. Simon Sinek. That's what it is. And is that one called The Change or The Purpose? Or it's the one about rethinking what your business is about. And the message was, obviously, when you're in business, you are in business to make money. There's no doubt about that. You're there to earn a living and to grow and all that kind of stuff. But that there's nothing inherent about a business that means you can't have a purpose that moves things forward and does good things and treats people well and all that kind of stuff. That you don't have to have this mentality of the bottom line at all costs, that is not what business is about. It was a great book, great read, even though I don't remember.
Are you talking about The Infinite Game?
The Infinite Game, yes.
Yeah,
that one. The Infinite Game. That was one of my favorite business-related books that I've read in recent memory. So that will be my professional learning, that I would say.
That's awesome. Wow. Well, thank you all so much for joining us. This has been so much fun. I love that this is becoming an annual tradition for us to do trends and predictions for the coming year on the Gig Academy. And it's great to get to share this time with the three of you. So thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for
having me. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks.
Wendy, hopefully it's not too long before you're a repeat guest, a regular.
All right. Happy to do it.
Excellent. And thank you to our audience for joining us this whole year in 2022. It's been great. This is episode 19. We couldn't do it without all of you listening in on the various platforms and everything. So thank you for joining us. And be sure to check out the show notes for the information we discussed during the podcast. And we'll see you in 2023. Have a happy and safe holiday season. And thank you for joining us, Open Forcers. Take care.